This is The Meaning of Green, Season 3. I'm Vivian Thompson. In Season 1 of The Meaning of Green, my guests and I examined how we've managed to solve or not to solve major environmental problems like acid rain and leaded gasoline, and we applied the policy lessons we had learned to climate change. Season 2 investigated the links between power, freedom, and the environment, and whether those links shed light on the coronavirus's emergence and spread. Season 3's overarching theme is place and the environment. We'll travel to different locations in the United States and around the world, characterize their environmental issues and possible remedies, and explore connections with other places. This podcast is independently produced in Cedar Closet Studios in Charlottesville, Virginia, and has no sponsor. No outside entity influences the content of this podcast. Before I started The Meaning of Green, I was for 20 years a professor of environmental policy at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville. My experience is not just academic, though. I've also been an environmental regulatory official in Virginia and at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. My 3 published books are about garbage transport, climate change policy in the U.S., Brazil, and Germany, and about who wields power and how when we regulate air pollution. You can find out more about The Meaning of Green and find links for all podcast episodes at the podcast's website, meaningofgreen.com. This preview episode is about the magic of natural and human-made water delivery systems in the U.S. and in Brazil, and about what happens when those systems fail. On my grandmother's small farm in the U.S. state of Pennsylvania, there was no irrigation system for her small field where she grew vegetables for the family's use. She depended on the rains, not only for her garden, but also to fill her drinking water cistern. When the weather was dry, I remember pumping water into buckets and carrying water to the field. If my grandmother were still alive, she would probably use a less labor-intensive way of watering her vegetables. Water delivery systems have been installed all over the world. Agriculture is the largest freshwater use by far, accounting for 80% of water use in the U.S. and 70% worldwide. But my water focus of late has been at the household level. In my city, Charlottesville, Virginia, and in urban areas around the world, water appears at our taps as if by magic. We often take that luxury for granted. Right now, though, I am absolutely not taking that luxury for granted. Until recently, the water supply to my house was interrupted. No, Charlottesville has not suddenly run out of water, although we are officially in moderate drought conditions. Even so, water has not suddenly become hugely expensive. We Charlottesville residents pay about 1 cent per gallon of clean water delivered by pipe to our homes. Rather, the aging pipe that brings water to our house was leaking at a shockingly high rate. So we stockpiled water and used it sparingly. We were able to fix the leak, even though it took some time to find it. Our stringent water conservation measures were voluntary and temporary. But in the western and southwestern United States, millions of people are living with imposed water restrictions because of prolonged drought. In 2020, Dr. Park Williams of the University of California at Los Angeles and his colleagues published a study that showed that in the American Southwest, the years 2000 to 2018 were the driest 19 years since the late 1500s. They also concluded that climate change has exacerbated this drought. Here's Dr. Williams in a 2020 presentation hosted by the U.S. government's National Integrated Drought Information System.
And so the answer to the final question is, our estimate is that yes, human-caused climate change did contribute importantly to this drought. We estimate 47% based on the multi-model mean trends in climate, but we think that there's a lot of uncertainty around that number, and we're much more comfortable saying the human-caused climate change has contributed substantially to the drought, but it could be anywhere probably from 25% to over 47%.
Record-breaking high temperatures in the American West have added to the existing heavy strain on water supplies. And millions of people in California, Arizona, and Nevada depend on electricity generated by dams like Hoover Dam, which is on the Colorado River not far from Las Vegas, Nevada. Lake Mead, Hoover Dam's reservoir and the largest human-made lake in the United States, is at 35% capacity, its lowest level since the reservoir was being filled in the 1930s. Hoover and other Western dams are generating less electricity than before. The U.S.'s Pacific Coast states depend on rain events that scientists call atmospheric rivers. These are flowing columns of condensed water vapor in the atmosphere that produce significant amounts of rain and snow. Brazilians have a more poetic term for these flowing water vapor columns, flying rivers. To understand how those rivers come about, we must travel to the Amazon forest. For many listeners, the first association with the Amazon forest is its role as a huge carbon sink that helps counteract climate change. Annually, this forest absorbs an enormous amount of carbon dioxide, by some estimates, an amount equal to 5% of carbon dioxide emitted by humans around the globe. Deforestation and fires in the Amazon threaten to turn the forest into a source of carbon dioxide rather than a sink. The Amazon forest is also crucial to Brazil's water cycle. Brazil's flying rivers originate in the Amazon forest and send water south to the country's more heavily populated areas. Dr. Virginia Parenchi is a professor at the Institute of Energy and Environment at Brazil's University of São Paulo. Professor Parenchi described those flying rivers in my interview with her in December 2019 in São Paulo.
If the forest is reduced, we will not count with this huge amount of water that comes from the atmosphere that travels from the Amazon region to the reservoirs in the central south of Brazil, which is the place where the major reservoirs are.
And hydropower dams.
And the hydropower dams, yes, exactly.
Dr. Carlos Antonio Nobre is a Brazilian earth scientist, also at the University of São Paulo, who has long studied the Amazon. His work, known worldwide, was recognized in 2021 by the American Association for the Advancement of Science with that organization's Science Diplomacy Award. Dr. Nobre was interviewed for a 2018 film made by Bettina Earhart and sponsored by the German Ministry of Economic Cooperation and Development. It's called Without the Forest, There is No Water. The film is short, and I highly recommend that you watch it on YouTube. In the film, Dr. Nobre describes the magical flying rivers effect, which is unexpected because the Amazon lies at latitudes where, in other parts of the world, we find deserts.
The flying rivers imply that the moisture carried through the atmosphere to Central South America is maintained and pumped by the Amazon. Amazon, because it's giving off so much water vapor, it's very cool, cooler than the tropical Atlantic, where the trade winds come from and enter South America. This is a paradox, because a hot surface has low pressure over it. A cold surface has high pressure over it. Wind blows always from the high pressure to the low pressure. So here comes the trade winds from the Atlantic and entering the Amazon, hot Atlantic entering the cool Amazon against the pressure gradient. How can that be? The water vapor, when it emerges from the forest, it harvests heat. That's why it cools down the surface. The water vapor is moving up in the atmosphere. When it condensates, there is a reduction. So when this vapor disappears, the pressure lowers down.
That is to say, evaporation of all that water from the trees lowers the air pressure over the forest. Scientists estimate that one large tree in the Amazon transpires, that is, evaporates, on average, 1,000 liters, or 264 gallons, a day. These trees are truly like geysers. In a 2011 TEDx talk, Dr. Nobre put this astounding figure into perspective.
Se você pegar toda a Amazônia, que é uma área muito
grande, Dr. Nobre is saying, if you take all of the Amazon, which is a very large area, and sum all of the water transpired, the forest sweat, you arrive at an extraordinary figure, 20 billion tons per day. So how much is that? The Amazon River, the largest river in the world, responsible for 1/5 of the fresh water in the whole world that flows from the continents to the oceans, discharges 17 billion tons of water per day into the Atlantic Ocean. This river of vapor, which is released from the forest to the atmosphere, is bigger than the Amazon River. Just so you have an idea, if you could get a huge tea kettle, the kind you plug into a wall socket, an electric tea kettle, and put all of those 20 billion tons of water into the kettle, how much electricity would you need to evaporate all of that water? Does anyone have an idea? A quite large tea kettle, a tea kettle for giants. 50,000 Itaipus. Itaipu, for those who don't know, is the largest hydroelectric dam in the world right now. It's a source of pride for Brazil because it provides more than 30% of the energy consumed in Brazil. And the Amazon forest is here doing this for free. In that same 2018 film, Without the Forest, There Is No Water, Dr. Nobre explains that the clearing of the Amazon for agriculture has made room for fires, which impede the Amazon's natural capacity for rainmaking.
The forest dries during the dry season because of fires. Fires produce smoke and soot, so the clouds start forming with too many small droplets who do not coalesce to produce rain. So they start falling a little bit and evaporate again. So the forest spends sometimes months, 2 months without any rain. So it becomes so dry, it catches fire.
In that 2011 TEDx talk, Dr. Nobre said he was taken aback at something Davi Kopinawa once said. Davi Kopinawa is a shaman and spokesperson for the Yanomami people, who live on a reserve deep in the Amazon forest. They continue to fight invasions by predatory interests like gold miners, and they have fallen victim to many imported diseases like COVID-19.
Será que o homem branco não sabe que se ele tirar a floresta,
Dr. Nobre is saying, is it really possible that the white man doesn't know that if you cut the forest, the rains will stop, and if the rains stop, you won't have anything to eat or drink? I listened to that, and I was moved to tears, because I said I've spent 20 years studying this with a supercomputer, dozens, thousands of scientists, and we're beginning to arrive at the same conclusion that he already knows. An aggravating factor is that the Yanomami have never cut down the forest. How can they know that the rain stops? This stuck in my mind, and I remained deeply affected. How could he know? Some months later, we met at another event, and I said, Davi, how is it that you knew that cutting down the forest stops the rain? He said, a spirit of the forest told us. This, for me, was a game changer. It was a complete change because I said, gee, why am I doing all of this science to arrive at the conclusion that he already knows? And then something absolutely critical hit me, which is, out of sight, out of mind. Dr. Nobre says we must open our eyes to our own ignorance about the Amazon's wonders, that we haven't even begun to see them. We must protect the Amazon and save ourselves by preserving and restoring natural ecosystems. Dr. Nobre quotes Suprapa Seshan, a leader in forest recovery in India. She says we must garden back the biosphere. Such efforts are underway in Brazil, for example, in the city of Extrema in the Brazilian state of Minas Gerais. Farmers there are paid to participate in ecosystem restoration projects. Brazil's Marina Silva has won the prestigious Goldman Environmental Prize, served in Brazil's National Senate, and run for president. She was National Minister of the Environment between 2003 and 2008. While she was Minister of the Environment, deforestation rates dropped markedly. Ms. Silva grew up in the Amazon forest. In this 2021 talk for Florida State University, she emphasizes that the intact forest offers many bioeconomic opportunities, for example, through açaí. Ms. Silva is saying the production chain for açaí, based on the bioeconomy, açaí is an Amazon fruit that produces a marvelous juice, highly nutritious, rich in iron. Açaí is responsible for generating more than 300,000 jobs. The Amazon has 350 species of trees used for commercial purposes, that is, just focusing on those that have commercial uses if used sustainably. I could spend the whole time today just talking about those immense riches, but the Amazon also helps regulate the equilibrium of the planet. The forest produces 20 billion tons of water every day, responsible for rain systems, especially in South America and Brazil. Without the Amazon, Brazil would not be the agricultural power that it is. Brazil has more fresh water than any other country in the world, but when I described my home water rationing to my daughter, who lives in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, she said with resignation, "Oh, yeah, we might have to do that soon, too." Brazil's central, southern, and southeastern regions have been hit with the worst drought in 90 years. Water rationing is already taking place in parts of the country. We can understand one of that drought's causes by traveling to another of Brazil's natural ecosystem treasures, the Pantanal. The Pantanal is the world's largest freshwater wetlands, straddling Brazil, Bolivia, and Paraguay. It spans roughly the same amount of area as the entire state of Florida. The Pantanal supports amazing biodiversity and looks from the air like a lush impressionist painting with vivid blues and greens. This ecosystem acts like a giant sponge, holding water and then slowly releasing it to surrounding rivers and downstream urban areas. But in the past couple of years, the Pantanal, a wetlands, has suffered a drought and it has been burning. So, where has this drought come from? Researchers have tied the Pantanal's drought to deforestation in the Amazon, which has reduced the flow in that magical flying river. People set illegal fires in Brazil's Pantanal and in the Amazon to clear land for agriculture. Brazil's drought has also been tied to climate change. Yet another factor is agricultural expansion in Brazil's vast interior savanna region, the Cerrado. The Cerrado is home to great biodiversity, and most of Brazil's river basins rely on water fed from the Cerrado. Loss of native vegetation has made the Cerrado hotter and drier. When Brazil experiences droughts, electricity supplies are threatened. Dr. Virginia Parenchi spoke to the importance of water for Brazil's electricity generation in that same December 2019 interview. Sugarcane bagasse is the plant residue from sugarcane production.
In the beginning of this century, the share of hydropower in the electricity mix reached 90% in some years. Even though we have more nowadays plants, thermal power plants run by natural gas, coal or oil, and sugarcane bagasse, and also wind and solar in Brazil. And one can say that Brazil is a very gifted country in terms of energy sources. Most of our electricity is provided through hydropower.
On the border between Argentina and Brazil lie majestic Iguazu Falls, one of the most massive waterfall systems in the world. Iguazu Falls are 1.5 miles wide and consist of an estimated 275 separate cascades, including one that is 80 meters tall, taller than Niagara Falls. The name Iguazu comes from the Guarani native people, meaning great waters. In this moment, those great waters are flowing at a fraction of their usual capacity. Not far from Iguazu Falls is the huge hydroelectric facility Dr. Nobre mentioned, Itaipu, which is now generating the lowest amount of electricity in 27 years. So even though Brazil now generates more electricity from sources other than dams, electricity might be rationed unless substantial energy imports become possible. Deforestation in Brazil is exacerbated by demand around the world for crops like soybeans. An upcoming Season 3 episode will explore the links between ecosystem destruction in Brazil and consumption habits in the European Union. The water leak at my house has forced me to re-examine consumption habits that I thought were already pretty conservation-oriented. Under normal circumstances, my husband and I avoid wasting water. We have water-saving household devices, we don't irrigate our garden, and we don't have a water-hogging lawn. We manage our land for biodiversity, we have no turf. As a result, we use much less water than is usual in U.S. households. But when our water supply was interrupted, I was amazed at how much more water we could conserve. We did simple things we might not do otherwise, like collecting rainwater, washing our hair with it, and then using the gray water in the toilet tank. I intend to carry on with some of those same conserving habits. To keep water supplies flowing and to increase water delivery to more people around the globe, we will have to go far beyond fixing and maintaining our complicated systems of water storage and delivery. Desalination projects are already helping in some places, but desalination on a large scale leaves mountains of salt residue. The world's affluent nations must lead the way by continuing to increase water use efficiency, conserve water, protect ecosystems that store water, and incentivize creative solutions. For example, home water systems can capture rainwater and reuse it in a variety of ways, like my grandmother's cistern. We'll have to create all kinds of new magic, and we'll have to do so fast. Saving and restoring natural ecosystems is essential to preserving water supplies around the world. As Season 2's episodes documented in some detail, ecosystem destruction has also brought us virus spillovers. Each one of us can be an ecosystem gardener on a small scale, even as we vote for politicians who will support ecosystem protection on a large scale. Those of us in affluent nations have a special responsibility to live more lightly on Earth starting yesterday. Here is a postscript to this episode. The musical underlay at the beginning and end is Hoagie Carmichael's poignant 1939 song I Get Along Without You Very Well, with lyrics based on a poem by Jane Brown Thompson. The singer mourns a lost love, but tries to pretend everything's okay. I thought of that song when, in my household, we lost our running water, found ways to cope, but missed the luxury of tap water terribly. In the Season 3 episodes to come, among the places we'll travel to are Kenya, Germany, Chile, Portugal, Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Norfolk, Virginia. Each place has a story to tell that informs our actions in other parts of the world. The first episode, to be launched in mid to late August, is called Coal Dust is Black. I'm Vivian Thompson. Thank you for listening to The Meaning of Green.